Hey, everybody, welcome to Talking Hockey Sense. It's Chris Peters here, and it is episode 105 of the podcast. And we are back from the ECHL All-Star Classic and much to talk about on the ECHL front, but also we'll be talking about the 2024 NHL Draft. NHL Central Scouting's rankings came out last week. We'll take a look at some of the rankings, some of the surprises, maybe some of the things that come out. But when the Central Scouting midterm rankings come out, that kind of kicks off the second half of the draft season. So we wanted to talk about that here. I'll give you a little bit more detail about what's coming from Flow Hockey on the NHL draft as well, because now that the World Juniors is over and now that our focus has turned to 2024 NHL draft, it's going to be a lot more draft stuff. We also have college hockey postseason on the horizon. We have the postseason of the USHL, all of our other junior leagues, and also, you know, the ECHL, SPHL. So lots of big time hockey, important hockey coming your way on Flow Hockey. But I wanted to start today with something that we actually saw on Flow Hockey over the weekend. It was one of the most viral moments of the young hockey season. And if you have not seen it, you can head over to Flow Hockey's YouTube page for the full game and also the highlights of Terry Ryan, the 47-year-old hockey player turned actor that plays a hockey player turned real hockey player once again. He made his comeback to the ECHL. The Newfoundland Growlers needed some guys. They called Terry Ryan, who was a top 10 draft pick in 1995 by the Montreal Canadiens. Only ended up playing 8 games in his NHL career, long-term career in the minors. But, you know, he hadn't played a game in the ECHL in over 20 years. And he gets the opportunity to play for the Newfoundland Growlers. He's from the area. He's from the province of Newfoundland. And if you've ever seen the TV show Shorzy, that is Ted Hitchcock on the show. Don't ask me what it sounds like. And he is also like, you know, kind of this hockey nomad in some ways. But, you know, he's been on the Spit and Chicklets podcast a lot. He has his own podcast. He's written a book. I mean, this is a guy that is a hockey lifer. And here he is at 47 years old helping out the local team because the Growlers had lost players to call-ups, to injury. They had Johnny Tyconek at the All-Star game. They just needed bodies. And Terry Ryan, who is local, was available and in good shape too. I mean, he did it. He played the whole game. He started the game. And then he also got into a fight. He ended up with 7 minutes in penalties, a fighting major plus the instigator. Fought in the third period after one of his teammates got hit, and Terry didn't like it, so he went after the guy, and it was a legitimate, you know, fight that between two guys. And Terry Ryan was actually celebrating his 47th birthday that day. So the reason I bring it up on this podcast is that I think it's just an incredible lesson and a great story in a lot of ways as well. What I think about, you know, the passion for the game that never dies, the love of hockey, and then also for anybody that's ever played hockey or any sport really, and you played at a competitive level, and then eventually that competitive level goes away. I mean, it could be anything. Like I played JV hockey, and that still was, you know, feeling like when you lose that, it's a bit of a loss, and you miss that what you get. And so, you know, for Terry Ryan, 20 years after his pro career ended, to get an opportunity to play in an ECHL game, to get a chance to play in front of his home fans, in front of his daughter as well, a 13-year-old daughter. And if you saw the interview with Terry after the game, you can check it out on the Newfoundland Growlers Twitter page. It went just absolutely viral because it was so pure and emotional that, you know, you just love to see the passion that somebody has for the game and that this how much that opportunity meant for him. And I think anybody that has ever played a sport wishes they could have lived that out. And, but it's just amazing to see. Make sure you go over to the Flow Hockey YouTube page. We also have the video on flowhockey.tv, but you could actually see the entire game, of Terry Ryan's, comeback. And then also, you know, just his curtain call that he got as well. I mean, imagine that, you know, you get to play in front of your home fans and you get a curtain call, at the end of the game. Now, Newfoundland lost the game. They lost the game about 6-2, and it was, you know, they lost some points in the standings, but who cared about the result after seeing the emotion and the mutual love between Terry Ryan and the Newfoundland fans? So Make sure you check that out. And just, you know, just so cool to watch. I cut the highlights and just, you know, I was, you know, emotional just seeing that, just how great that is. And Terry Ryan has become such a beloved figure because of Shorzy, because of, you know, his appearances on podcasts. It seems like everybody was rooting for him, and then he delivered. And actually, he played confident hockey. I mean, like, he threw a check on his first shift, and he was able to break the puck out. I mean, you know, he doesn't have the skating ability that he used to. And if you ever go look at his WHL highlights, I mean, the guy had a lot of skill back in his day as well. But man, that was cool to see. But also, as I mentioned off the top of the show, I got back from the ECHL All-Star Classic. I was out there with Liz Child from Flow Hockey, and we were able to get a bunch of content that's going to be coming your way over the course of the rest of the season. But I did want to talk about the All-Star game itself, because if there's one thing I saw at this game, the ECHL game, you know, it was an All-Star game. So, you know, like, the competitiveness is not as high. The speed is not as high, but the players were empowered to just do stuff and try stuff. And if you check out on Flow Hockey's Twitter page, you know, and on our YouTube shorts, we've got the goals that Brandon Hawkins and Matt Brown scored in that game for the All-Stars, where they were just absolutely electric moves. We had, you know, basically Hawkins doing a spinorama with the puck under his stick blade, and then he was able to score, and then a crazy move from Matt Brown, Rob Schrempf style, to score on a breakaway. And it was just a fun environment. And it was also in Savannah, Georgia. And it was my first time at Enmarket Arena in Savannah. It was my first time in Savannah, period. And to see the way that hockey has been embraced in Savannah, Georgia, will make you love the sport even more. Because, you know, obviously, you know, I'm staring at about 10 feet of snow out my window right now. I'm missing the warmth of Savannah. But you think about, you know, the North has been, the Northern United States have been such a, you know, with our winters, hockey has become part of, you know, more of our culture. And now you're seeing it continue to spread into non-traditional markets. And Savannah didn't really have a long or at all hockey history. And the Ghost Pirates have come in and become a big deal. And that's really cool to see. Beautiful arena, beautiful setup, affiliated with the Golden Knights. And that is just, they put on a tremendous show there. Cannot say enough about Savannah and the way that those fans showed up and supported their team. It was really cool to see. And also, you know, we had a great skills competition. You can go back and check out all those highlights in the full game at flowhockey.tv. But shout out to the ECHL for a great event and just a lot of fun in Savannah, Georgia. And it was great to see the All-Stars just trying to do stuff and entertain, and that's what that should be all about. All right. So that was kind of my weekend, but now we're going to get back focused in on the prospect side of things, which we do every week on this podcast. We talk a lot about the prospects, and certainly over the course of the next several months, we're going to talk a lot about the NHL draft. And so we're moving on to the 2024 NHL draft and talking about that. And the reason that I wanted to bring it up now is because, you know, we get this opportunity with the NHL Central Scouting Rankings coming out last week on Friday. Got a chance to review them. And I like to kind of take a look and, you know, I've got my own rankings. I'll do my own thing with it. But when you see the Central Scouting Rankings, it allows you to kind of get a little bit of a counterpoint to maybe how you're feeling about things. And I think that, you know, this list and this draft remains really exciting to kind of follow. You know, Macklin Celebrini is the number one guy, number one North American skater. That was no surprise. I think everybody that has watched him play this year has seen a player that has only delivered on the expectations that were set for him at the beginning of the season, and maybe even in some cases has exceeded them. In my personal opinion, I don't think there's anybody close to him for the discussion of number one in this draft. I think a number of the players that are there have dropped off. I just think that Macklin Celebrini, you know, does he bring the excitement factor of a Connor Bedard? No, but I still think that we're talking about an incredibly special player here. A guy that I think is going to help a franchise immensely in the immediate future, and then also, you know, be potentially a franchise-changing prospect in the long term. You know, he's an average-sized center, great two-way capabilities, complete player, highly competitive, highly skilled, good skater. I mean, everything that he does is putting him on a path to being a number one NHL center. You know, I think the only thing that he doesn't have is that size. You know, he's the most recent measurement, however, from Central Scouting is 6 foot and 190 pounds. I don't know if that's the official, that was not the official weigh-in, but that is what he's listed at now. They did not have the official numbers from Central Scouting for him in particular, but at the same time, 5'11", 6 foot, you know, he's right in that kind of average size now for a lot of NHL forwards. And I'm not really worried about that. He plays on the inside of the dots. He gets to the areas that he needs to get to. He plays defensively. He's smart in all zones. You know, there's just really nothing to worry about with Macklin Celebrini. So no surprise to see him number one. Where things get interesting is in, you know, who was number one on the European rankings, who was numbers two through eight on the North American skater list. So, you know, let's just kind of, I'm just going to kind of go down the list a little bit. And, you know, if you haven't seen the list yet, NHL.com has the entire list of all the skaters, more than 200 players, almost 224 are currently listed in the NHL Central Scouting for North America. And that's just the skaters. So that's a lot of players. Obviously, not all of them are going to be drafted. But let's take a look at the top 10 that they had for North American skaters. And number two, Artem Levshinov from Michigan State University. This is consistent with what, you know, I've been hearing as well. You know, I think Levshinov is one of the best defensemen in this draft, if not the best defenseman in the draft. It's kind of a debate between him and Anton Siliaev. But I think that Levshinov is a special player. He's having a tremendous season at Michigan State. He just had a 4-point game last weekend. And to see him continue to excel and progress, I think we're seeing a player now that is really starting to look like he could be a top pairing defenseman in the NHL. I thought that coming into the season. I feel stronger about it now. I know there are some people that kind of question his overall defensive ability. I don't really have that big of a concern about it. I don't think it's that big of a deal. He is over a point per game player as a true freshman in college hockey. He was he had 42 points last season. You know, so you compare kind of what he's doing now to what Owen Power did, because he's following basically the Owen Power path with one fewer year in the USHL. And so with Levshinov, Owen Power's freshman year at the University of Michigan, he went number one overall. He had 16 points in 26 games as a freshman at the University of Michigan. Obviously, a bit of a wonky year with COVID and everything else, still kind of impacting players. This year, through 22 games, 24 points for Artem Levshinov. Remarkable. Just remarkable. Is he going to be a better defenseman than Owen Power? I think Owen Power has a little bit more of a well-rounded game, and I think that he's still finding his way in the NHL. Artem Levshinov, you know, not quite as big, but as mobile, you know, that right shot. To me, there's a lot there. I fully agree, you know, with his status as the number two North American skater. And that's not, you know, consensus. I don't think there's really any consensus after Celebrini. And you could maybe even find a few places where some of those teams might take the defenseman over Celebrini. But I mean, Artem Levshinov is a legit talent and a guy that I think will be really exciting to watch. Caden Lindstrom was the number three North American skater for Medicine Hat Tigers. You know, big body, 6 foot three. So, you know, he's been listed as taller, but he's 6 foot three and a quarter, according to the confirmed height by NHL Central Scouting, the most recent measurement from them, 210 pounds. And he is a legitimate goal scoring threat. He throws his weight around. He's got a good work ethic off the puck. He plays really well with it. I think Caden Lindstrom is, you know, certainly earned his stock here. And this is where things start to get a little more interesting, because at number four, Zeev Buyum. So Zeev Buyum listed as at 6 foot, 183 pounds. Not confirmed by NHL Central Scouting, but that's the measurement that they have him listed at. Left shot, highly skilled defenseman, currently on pace to have one of the best freshman seasons ever in the history of NCAA hockey for a defenseman, at least in terms of production. And that's what I think is going to be fascinating to watch with Zeev Bouyam, is he's going to continue to point it up at Denver, where things are just going super well for him. 27 points in 20 games thus far. He had 2 assists in his last game, his second game back from the World Junior Championship, where he was exceptional for Team USA with 5 points in 7 games. You know, I think the interesting thing is, as a somewhat undersized defenseman, just in terms of, you know, he's got that, like, you know, 6 foot kind of on the fringe, and a bit on the lighter side, you know, he probably has a little bit more to prove, but he's so dynamic. And I think the teams are really starting to come around on his ability to also defend. I think it still needs improvement. He needs to make better decisions with the puck at sometimes, but I mean, what he does offensively, I think there's a lot to like about Zeev Bouyam. And that's big there. So after Bouyam was Trevor Connolly, who comes in at just shy of 6'1", 156 pounds. So a guy that still needs to tack on weight, but you see the way that he plays, and it really does not seem to hinder him very much. I mean, Trevor Connolly, you know, when he's on his game, when he's at his top level, he is one of those guys that is very difficult to take the puck from, and a guy that is always on and around the puck. And so he creates a lot of turnovers as well. Currently on pace for 80 points in the USHL with 35 in 25 games. He just played in the All-American Prospects game, which was on Monday of this past week. And he continues to excel anytime. You know, he had 10 points at the Gretzky Cup, 11 points at the World Junior A Challenge. Every big stage that you put him on, he seems to deliver. Obviously, the there are still comments and concerns that I hear from scouts about, you know, the decision to take him. You know, it's more of a discussion that they have to have at higher levels of their organization with Trevor Connolly. You know, Connolly has certainly tried to put the work in to make up for some of the mistakes. We've talked about him on this podcast before. You know, and I do think that there is always going to be that debate among teams. There will be teams that will probably have him as a no draft, just because they don't want to deal with certain headaches that could potentially come with that. But I do think that this is a player, you know, we've talked about some of the players that whether or not they should be drafted, you know, every team's going to do their due diligence because Connolly has had such a tremendous year, and then they've got to make a decision on the character side of things. And I think that a lot of teams now are more heavily investing in that kind of research into a player and will make their most educated decision. At 6, we had Carter Yakemchuk, from Calgary, defenseman, right shot defenseman, just a hair short of 6'3", 190 pounds. I mean, this is a guy that has risen up the charts all year long. I think there's a lot of teams that like him. They like what he brings to the table offensively. They feel like he can defend well enough. They feel like he's got the mobility. Really interesting player. And, you know, I think the debate starts here, you know, with guys like Yakemchuk and Sam Dickinson versus Zeev Bouyam, who's a smaller player compared to those guys, but maybe has a little bit more of that dynamic element. Looking here at, you know, Dickinson came in at number 7, and he's also just a hair short of 6'3", and a bit over 200 pounds, a left-shot defenseman. He is really pointing it up in the OHL with the London Knights right now. Highly offensive. I think the defense is going to be something that he can be coached into and developed into better. I think that's going to be a big time player. But you know, you look at that run on defenseman, you know, we've got 4 defensemen that we've just talked about in the top 7 players. And we haven't even discussed the Europeans that are involved in this yet. This is just for the North American skaters. And then at 8th, this was probably the surprise for a lot of people, but this is where things have been trending for the last little while. Cole Iserman, who came into this season looking like the number 2 prospect for the NHL draft, is listed as the 8th best North American skater. You know, odds are if you're 8th there, you're probably somewhere just on the outside of the top 10, because we look at Konstantin Hellenius on the other side, Ivan Demidov, Anton Siliaev. There are a number of European players now that could potentially go ahead of Cole Iserman. And so we have a question in the podcast that we'll get to later about, you know, the hows and whys. But I think that the main thing is here, there's a couple of factors in the Yzerman drop, and a lot of it has more to do with the other players. Big defensemen with mobility, with puck moving skills, with the ability to produce points are at a premium. We saw it in the last draft when we said, hey, you know, this is not the best year for defensemen. If you're hunting for defensemen, maybe wait a little bit. Teams are still going to invest in big defensemen with mobility. And that's where a guy like Cole Yzerman, who is an elite goal scorer with an NHL-ready shot, with an ability to put the puck in the net, 32 goals in 30 games so far this season, 53 points. You know, this is a guy that I think teams will ultimately covet and believe that he can score. But the trend has slipped. The trend has slipped down for him. And, you know, that is, I think, in part because there are teams that still feel that he's a bit too one-dimensional, that, you know, he's going to need a good center to drive play, and that, you know, there's guys like that, you know, a top-line wing that can score is still going to be a very high pick, but is he going to be a top-five pick if he's not a play driver in the way that NHL teams want them to be? And I think that's really going to be the discussion that's had around Cole Yzerman all the way through. But here's a guy that, you know, very well could score, you know, upwards of 70 goals this season. And, you know, then you have a decision to make. But we saw Cole Caulfield fall. Yzerman's bigger, maybe a little bit of a better skater and stronger on his skates as well. So we'll see exactly what that does. But yeah, coming in at 8, that might have been a surprise for a lot of people. So that's kind of where we're at on the on that front in terms of the North American skaters. When it comes to the Europeans, though, also interesting there. Konsta Helenius was the number one European skater from Finland. Love that player. I think he does a lot of things really well, very well-rounded, very competitive. You know, not a big guy, but he's very competitive and has had a tremendous season in Finland this year with the points that he's been able to put up. And I do think that there's a chance that he could sneak into the top five conversation, depending on what happens with the defenseman. But I think it's more likely that we'll see those defensemen go ahead of a 5'11 guy who could be a center, could be a wing, you know, kind of waiting to see. But 22 points in 30 games in Finland right now, in their top pro league. He had 2 points at the World Juniors. I think, you know, his production wasn't very great, but he did have, I thought he played well in the tournament. I liked what I saw from him. You know, he got big minutes as well, played a ton in the most important games, you know, was given a lot of time. And, you know, he's a player I like an awful lot. So we got Konsta Helenius there. Number two guy was Anton Siljaev. And why is he so, he is going to be the real wild card of this draft. Russian defenseman, you know, 6'7", and he can skate. He's a bit of a unicorn in how well he skates at his size. That is the key. And that the question is going to be, is the offense what we saw? You know, his offense cooled off from the beginning of the year. He's putting, you know, record pace offense at the beginning of the KHL season. But, you know, he's kind of cooled off. But I think you look at the minutes that he plays, you look at the style that he plays, teams are going to covet him. And I don't think they're going to be scared away by the Russian factor. We have a question about that coming up later as well. But I think with Siljaev, he is one of those guys that teams just are going to dig in on and dig in on and dig in on. And I think he's one of the few players that has a chance to knock off Macklin Celebrini. I'll say it, my personal opinion is that it's not close. But I know that is not necessarily widely held. But Siljaev is one of those interesting guys where it's like, gosh, he's so big. He's so mobile. He seems to play with that, you know, a decent amount of edge. He's got strength to him and he can move pucks and he can make plays. So at his size, with his mobility and athletic package, like that's going to be a very attractive quality. He is under contract in the KHL until 2025-26. So you're waiting for a while. But at the same time, if you can add a player of his size and his ability, you know, you want to work with that player. You want to develop that player. And I think a lot of teams are going to be attracted by that. that means that number three is Ivan Demidov. And, you know, Demidov has been one of those, you know, tantalizing Russian prospects that I think a lot of us are intrigued by. You know, the difference between him and a Matvey Michkov is that Demidov's viewings will only be against KHL, second tier, and MHL opponents. And he's dominant at the Russian U20 level in the MHL, 32 points in 20 games. He really can't be slowed down. There's not really a place for him to play for SKA St. Petersburg. So, you know, he will continue to play at that level, but he plays a lot. He's been on fire of late. I think I'm looking at right now, he has points in every game since December 17th. So he's basically on a month-long point streak right now in the MHL, has goals in each of his last three and in most of the games during this streak. So he's a tantalizing prospect, but again, we don't have that. We don't have the viewings of him against his peers in his age group, which is really, to me, it's not critical. We can still assess him there, but I just think that there's so much you can learn about a player in those international events. And we won't have that opportunity for the foreseeable future with Ivan Demidov. So it does make it interesting, and it makes me wonder, you know, what all did Konstantin Helenius do to move past Demidov? It's probably because, hey, he's played at the pro level in his home country and has excelled there. So it's a little bit more of a, he's proven it more, but you know, we'll have to wait and see. So those are some of the fascinating things that we get there. I did want to touch on the goalies a little bit quickly as well. This is not a great year for goaltenders. I don't know how many will get picked. We'll see plenty get picked. But it is not a great year to be looking for goaltending help. And, you know, the other thing is, too, is when you draft a goalie, you're expecting it to be a long-term project. I think that's all we have in this draft class. I don't see many players or any really that I look at and say that is absolutely the guy that I want to, you know, put a stamp of approval on and say he's going to be a starting goalie. It's really hard to do that with anybody, but I think particularly now, this is not a great year to be looking for goaltenders, but Carter George from the Owen Sound Attack is the number one ranked goalie, just shy of 6'1". So NHL teams is basically 6'1". They're starting to, that's where they're a little bit, you know, you got a 6'2". Okay. 6'1". I don't know. We got to do our due diligence. So we'll see how that ultimately impacts Carter George. But you know, aside from him, just not a ton of, goalies that I think are going to have a chance at going in the top three rounds of this draft. There always will be, but you never know. So we will find out exactly what happens there. All right. So you guys, that's, you know, I don't have a real critique. The one thing that I will say about the NHL Central Scouting, you have to remember that they operate as if they're the 33rd NHL team. They try to run it like, you know, a team would. They don't, they do these separate lists, the European and North American, which, I mean, I feel still is a little bit not as helpful. But it is, you know, in terms of identifying players, finding guys to watch, you know, NHL teams will still see, okay, well, Central had a guy here. We got to go watch him more to see if we agree or not. You know, those are the types of conversations that get had in NHL things. And then just for me, it's just a counterpoint to my own opinions on players. So it's always interesting to look at, and I really do appreciate seeing that. So with that, we go into our question and answer period, because that is what we do on this podcast. We answer questions, and you had a lot of them, and they're mostly NHL draft related. So we're going to go ahead and jump into those right now. And our first one comes from one of our most reliable questioners, and this is Avco Cup. And the question Avco Cup asks, I'm interested in hearing some about the right shot D with size in this draft. Charlie Ehlich, EJ Emery, and Colton Roberts. What range do you think they'll be drafted? Well, thank you for the question. And where do I think they'll be drafted? I mean, like, I am a big EJ Emery believer. I've liked his performance throughout the season. I think that there is a ton of upside in a player like him. You know, the numbers have not necessarily been there. He had a nice goal the other day in the All-American Prospects game. But, you know, I think that his athletic package in terms of the size, the skating ability, the puck skills, the different things. I'm seeing a good amount of that. I think he defends well. I think he's got the physicality. I think he can get a little bit meaner as he gets bigger and stronger, I should say, because, I mean, if he gets a lot bigger, it's going to be tough for anybody to get around him. I do think that, you know, he's probably nestled into the late first, early second round at this stage of the season. Offensively, we haven't necessarily seen enough from him to say, you know, does he belong in the same discussion as some of these other players? I had him very high at the beginning of the season. I don't think that I've seen the offensive maturation that I've wanted to see from him in order to kind of get that, you know, get that picture of him and what I think he ultimately can be. But I do think that EJ Emery is one of those players where you draft him and you just wait and let him develop. And I think you're going to have a guy that has at least, you know, that has top four potential. It's a risky projection at this point, but I do think that he's one of those guys that has that kind of projection where he could be a potential top four defenseman. But it, you know, it's going to take a lot of work. He was listed at 39th among North American skaters among this class here, and so he's in the mix there to potentially move up. And you know, but I like the player an awful lot, and I'm a believer. So if he, you know, I think even as a high second round pick, I think you're going to get tremendous value, or a late first, I think you're going to get good value out of that player. Moving on, you know, Charlie Ehlich is a guy that I've kind of had eyes on throughout the season. You know, another player where I think there's probably been a little bit, you know, underwhelming in terms of the offensive capability that he has shown or hasn't shown this year. You know, I think that there's enough of a defensive skill set. I think he's got the physical tools. Obviously, as a right shot guy, you got to give that guy the benefit of the doubt. You know, again, listed at 28th among North American skaters. I think with him, there's a lot of guessing in terms of what he's going to be. You know, what is his identity as a player? Who does he play like? What does he do? You know, that beyond being a good size defenseman with some mobility and some puck ability that he hasn't necessarily delivered on all season. So that's part of it. But he's interesting. And I think that that's another guy where it could be a late first, early second kind of scenario for him at this stage. Colton Roberts is a guy that I haven't done a ton of work on yet. I'm still, you know, piecing through my prospects and getting my midterm list ready. I know there's a question about that too. Looking like early February for that one as I kind of get through things and get back into business. But you know, I think Roberts is a player on the rise, and he's a guy that a lot more teams are paying closer attention to. You know, defensively there are issues. Offensively, it's good enough. I think you're again, this is another player where they're doing a lot of projecting and saying, "I see what he can do. I'm not sure what he'll ultimately become." But you know, you look at his stock continues to rise, and he was actually listed at 24th overall or among North American skaters by Central Scouting. You know, and he's another player where at 6'4", as a right shot with some puck ability, I think that there's going to be enough interest to say that he very well could sneak into that first round with that skill set. But we'll wait and see exactly how his season finishes. You know, if there's more development in his game, if he has a really strong finish this season, that could, you know, he could go one way or the other. You know, if he has a strong finish, he'll probably go pretty high. All righty. Next up is another EJ Emery question. This one comes from Alex, I believe. And so I forgot to write his name. Oh, excuse me, Marcus. We'll get it all figured out. Anyway, this one's about EJ Emery too. I'm going to need your EJ Emery takes, and sorry, Maxwell is what it is. My bad, Maxwell. Sorry about that. I'm going to need your EJ Emery takes, and why does it sound like teams are higher on him than the public? So I think it's for a lot of the reasons that I said, is that you look at EJ Emery, you see the size, the skating ability, you see that he still has room to grow in terms of his frame. He's going to fill out more. He's going to tack on more muscle. He's going to be a tougher player to get around. He's going to be a physical guy. He's going to defend well enough. The reason that, you know, I think that he probably doesn't have the same love in the public space is because of the numbers. You know, 15 assists throughout the season. I've seen him, you know, I think when you play with guys like James Higgins and Cole Iserman, and you know, there's a level of expectation, you know, just get the puck into their hands and you're going to pick up a lot of assists. And that hasn't necessarily happened with EJ Emery this year. But I think the player, you know, like there are a lot of teams that are just going to do that projection. And with the number of big defensemen in this year's draft, you know, that's what's going to push the value of these guys. Some of these guys are going to go higher than you would think because there is that run on defensemen. I think when teams saw St. Louis win the Stanley Cup, Vegas win the Stanley Cup, you know, they seem to forget about, you know, when Colorado won the Stanley Cup, but not the biggest decor. Teams want to be bigger. They want to be heavier. And I get that. And I think that they want to have that athletic capability of, you know, guys that can skate, that can, you know, play a heavy game, that can defend. There is still a premium on those players. I think teams are starting to go further and further in that direction towards the bigger defensemen. And there's less, it feels like there's less risk with those players, but I think a player like Emery still comes with a certain amount of risk because you don't know, you know, are the hands there enough? Is the vision there enough? Is the hockey sense there enough? I personally think yes, that it is. As I've said, I'm very high on EJ Emery, and I will continue to be until I see something that says I shouldn't. But I think there's a lot to like about him, and I think NHL teams will be very interested in talking to him, and will be watching him throughout the season with great interest. All right, we got one from Joseph here. And Joseph asks, which D-men in the 2024 NHL draft have the best shot at jumping right into the NHL? Good question. You know, I think the two guys that come to mind are Artem Levshinov and Anton Siljaev. Siljaev is under contract in the KHL, so he's not coming until at least 26, 27. And then you've got Levshinov, who's been a Division I player on a top program. Michigan State is looking like they are a legitimate contender this year, not just for Big Ten championships, but geez, they might even go all the way, which is something we haven't been able to say in about 17 years, or not quite that long. They won in 2007, but it feels like a really long time. I guess that is 17 years. Jeez, how are we this old, guys? Well, it's just me. I'm just the old one. But anyway, it's just like 2007 was 17 years ago. Okay, that hurts. But anyway, you know, I think that Levshinov is probably the most physically prepared. He's sturdy. He's got that ability. Do I think that it's a slam dunk that he's in the NHL next year? No, I don't. And maybe he stays at Michigan State for another year. Maybe he goes to the AHL. There's a lot of options where he's going to be drafted. The NHL team is going to have a lot of say in what the next step is for him. And it very well could be going to the AHL. But I think that what he's shown this year at Michigan State, the way that he's played, he at least has that opportunity to potentially be a pro. I still think there's more for him to learn. I still think there's more for him to reach for. We've seen Owen Power go back to school, become a little bit more prepared to arrive in the NHL ready. That may not be in the cards for Levshinov. I'm not really sure exactly what his intentions will be after the season. But I think of the defensemen, he's in the mix. You know, you could maybe make a case for Dickinson. I think just from his athletic toolkit, just the thing that the things that he does, the size, the ability. I think that there's still going to be a lot of junior in his game that would have to be coached out in terms of, you know, what you would need to get for him to be an everyday NHLer as a rookie, which is basically what you have to be if you're going to play right away in the league. I just don't see. I think it's harder and harder to project any defenseman as a immediate impact guy or immediate entry into the NHL without them being truly special. I do think that there's the potential that Levshinov is truly special, but we'll have to wait and see exactly what teams drafts him and what their status is on the blue line. So this next one comes from Zach, and this is also about Artem Levshinov. And he asks, does Levshinov's offense outweigh his current defensive weaknesses, warrant a top five pick? Well, I think he's a top five pick already. I think that his defensive deficiencies are overstated at times. He is definitely a guy that can push it offensively. He can get himself out of position. He can get himself into trouble at times. He can make bad reads with the puck. That's true of most defensemen that have the puck a lot. And so I think that he is, probably the most complete defenseman among them. Like I like his defending better than I like what I see out of Dickinson. I think that he is a little bit more, has more hockey sense than Selyaev. You know, so I think that there are some things that Levshinov does that really strike me as better than a lot of the players that he's going up against. But, you know, I think that that's going to be something that remains to be seen in terms of, you know, his development. The other thing is too, is, you know, I think you'd rather kind of like tame the offensive defenseman and get them into a more defensive mindset as a pro than you would trying to coax the offense out of them. I think that that's why guys like Levshinov will have such high value, because there is such a two-way value to what they bring. And I do think that his defending is better than maybe it's been reported or at least, you know, evaluated in some ways. Is it necessarily his biggest strength? Probably not. But it's really interesting to see, kind of the discourse around Levshinov, because I really do think that he's, you know, to me right now, the best defenseman in this draft. All right, let's talk about some forwards, why don't we? And we'll talk about a couple of forwards you can see regularly on Flow Hockey, and that would be Sasha Boisvert and Michael Hage. And this one comes from Arpin, who asks, who do you like more between Sasha Boisvert and Michael Hage? As a Flyers fan, I'm hoping we get at least one of the two, given our likely draft positions and need at center. So Sasha Boisvert, Muskegon Lumberjacks, Michael Hage of the Chicago Steel, two really good players that are producing at a high clip in the USHL this season. And, you know, I think that both of them are going to end up very close together on my draft list when it's finalized for the midterm. I think that they've both shown throughout this season that they have good offensive sense. They're competitive. They make plays. They, you know, are on a good path in terms of their development, strength training, becoming more well-rounded, their competitiveness. I think there's a lot to like about those guys. In case you hear anything, my dog just walked into the office, and we'll see if she wants to chime in on the podcast. But really, you know, I think that Boisvert has been, one of those players we watched all season. He continues to just get better. I was glad to see that they got a couple of the non-Americans in from the USHL into the All-American Prospect Game. It used to be, you know, all only American-born players. Boisvert was in there, and, you know, Matt Baker-Dean, Hage, getting those guys in there really, you know, I think it enhanced that game for one, and it increased the value of it as an evaluation point. But it also showed that, you know, there is a level between players. And I think you see Sasha Boisvert, Michael Hage, Trevor Connolly, those players that are highly regarded as potential first round draft picks. They just look different. And I think that that's what we see here with Boisvert. You know, I think that you got a lot of good skill, good competitiveness, good roundness. But I think, you know, if you're looking between the two, there's a case to be made for Hage. It's one of those. It's really close. I mean, they're similar in size. I think they're similar in ability. The thing is that Hage spent a lot of this year injured. He had to battle through that. You know, he did not have a good fall classic, and then, you know, but he's gotten better and better and better and better. Now 31 points in 28 games this season for a Chicago Steel team that's really struggled throughout the year. So, you know, I do think that those two guys are going to be available in the late first round. I think that that'll probably be the range where both of them end up. You never know. Sometimes those guys do slip into the early second round. I just think they're both really, you know, talented, smart hockey players. You know, I think I'd lean Boisvert at this point. You know, Hage's injury history is a risk factor. He was injured most of last season as well. You know, but he's gone through some things this year, and the adversity that he's had to battle through, I have a ton of respect for. And so I would say, you know, I think that Boisvert gives you just a little bit more security. And then, you know, but again, we're splitting hairs at this point. I think they're both really good players that could give you a lot of value. And I think that both have the potential to play center. I don't think that's guaranteed. It really never is in those late first round guys that they'll be centers. But I do think that that's a distinct possibility for both of them. So our next question comes from Rotorhead. And Rotorhead asks, are teams concerned about Russian players not coming over due to current events? And therefore, will Demidov fall in the draft? Well, I think if we saw last year's draft, the answer to that question is no. I don't think there has been far less chatter about that this year. I think that it just simply comes down to preference, to where you're at in your rebuild. Do I think that Demidov will fall much further than 7, 8, 9? Probably not. But it's possible. It's possible. And I just don't think that that's in the cards. I think the player's too good, and I think teams are too high on him to let him slip that fall. I think the same thing with Selyaev. A team that selects him might be one that has the flexibility to be a little more patient, you know, just because you won't have him for a couple of years. Like if you're the San Jose Sharks, is that the move that you make at number whatever, if you win the lottery, you take Macklin Celebrini, you never look back. But if you don't, you know, is Selyaev a guy that you can afford to wait on? And the answer is probably yes. I think those rebuilding teams don't need those guys right away. And in fact, it might help to keep them away from the losing situation for as long as possible. But that's going to be interesting to see. But I do not think the Russian factor will be tied to current events or even player contracts, because I think we saw that last year. That did not scare teams. You look at, you know, the Arizona Coyotes took two Russians in the first round. So, you know, that's where I think we'll see. There shouldn't be a ton there for that. All right. Our next question comes from Paul Double Double Coffee, and this is about Luke Misa. Luke Misa, ranked 45th in North American skaters, is a head-scratcher to me. Is there an element in his game that scouts aren't liking, hence the rank? You know, I think it's important to remember that the central scouting list is not always consensus. I think a player like Luke Misa is really all over the map in terms of his projection. I think there are a lot of different things that teams are looking at with him. You know, anytime you are a 5'10" or tall or smaller player, there are going to be questions about size in terms of, you know, do you have enough? Does he have the giddy up? Does he have the motor to play at that size? But then you also look at what he's done this year and the continual progression that he's shown. You know, the other thing is he is a late 2005 versus, you know, 2006 birth year. Doesn't necessarily have the size profile, doesn't have the athleticism of some of these other guys. So it's not terribly surprising to me to see that he fell in the eyes of central scouting or, you know, others. But I think he'll remain on the radar. I think he'll be a guy that kind of hovers around that second round discussion. I've never really viewed him as a necessarily a lock for the first round or anything like that. I know that the public lists have been a bit higher on him. You know, the skill level and the scoring ability is certainly there. But I, you know, I don't think that there's no real certainty in his projection, given the athletic profile that he has right now. So I think that could be part of why, you know, guys like that have that high skill, but have that risk factor, it's just a lot easier to select him in the second round, and feel a little bit better about those picks. And those are the guys, he seems like the type of guy that you're going to be really excited to get, in that second round. And I do think that he ultimately could be in the 40s, maybe even the 50s, when all is said and done. And I also think that part of the forward projections is that the quality of the defensive pool is really going to push a lot of these kind of, I don't want to say mid-tier, but like, you know, these forwards that are outside of that that collection of guys like the Berkeley Cattons and the, you know, the guys like the Liam Greentrees, guys like that, that are kind of in that next wave of first round draft picks after the Celebrini tier. You know, I think it is going to push a lot of these guys down just because of the run we expect to see on defensemen in this year's draft. So great question. Thank you very much, Mr. Paul Double Double Coffee, for that one. All right, our next one comes from Michael, and Michael says, do you have any players that you really like that you project to be a third round or later pick? Well, you know, I think in terms of, it's always tough to tell where these guys are ultimately going to go in terms of the range. You know, we have an idea of where we think some of these guys are going to go. But, you know, it's tough to say. So like third or lower is a little bit tougher to kind of pick. But, you know, I think one guy that I've kind of talked about a fair amount as a guy that I think will be, you know, in that third round fringe range is Christian Humphreys, you know, 5'11" forward with good skill, really like his vision. You know, I think that he has some of those things that are really good there. Another guy that I've liked quite a bit in Minnesota high school hockey, but also when he was playing in the USHL, is Hagan Burrows from Minnetonka High School. I think he's got a good size factor. There's strength to him. There's a work ethic to him. He plays well off the puck. You know, that's a guy that I like in that kind of range. Maybe he doesn't slip that far, but it's certainly possible. You know, I just think there are going to be a lot of those kind of guys where you're like, there's things that I like about them. You know, but what ultimately are they going to be as an NHL player? And, you know, one of those guys is Tanner Adams, who is currently at Providence. And, you know, he is a bit of a spark plug player. I've liked what I've seen from him at Providence this year. That's a guy that's kind of in that third, fourth, fifth, sixth round range. You know, he can kind of, a guy like him can go, excuse me, really anywhere. And he's going to be interesting to watch that one. That's to see exactly where he goes. But yeah, I'm going to be certainly intrigued. You know, it just seems like those third, fourth, and fifth round players are going to be guys that might be a little bit undersized, might, you know, take a swing on some skill. And that's why guys like Humphreys stand out to me, you know, as options potentially in that range. We'll see ultimately if they go that far. All right, our next question, switching it up a little bit to college hockey. We'll have some more draft questions in the offing here. But this one is about the University of Michigan's Seamus Casey. And this one comes from Jonathan. Jonathan asks, thoughts on a Seamus Casey Hobie run? He looks primed for a big second half after winning gold at the WJC. Well, Seamus Casey has had a tremendous season to date, and has certainly made a great case for himself to be a Hobie candidate. Whether or not he is able to get there will be very interesting, but you have to say, okay, what he's done right now in terms of his point production, 1.4 points per game. Now, a lot of that inflated. Michigan just played Stonehill College last weekend. All of those stats count for the national standings. And Casey was among the many Michigan players that went off that weekend. He had 5 points over the weekend, all assists. I think among the defensemen, he certainly has a case. I just think it's going to be very difficult to knock off the forwards this year, especially when you consider, you know, Quinnipiac's Colin Graf is averaging 2 points per game. If he hadn't missed games due to injury, you know, that his raw numbers would look better than they do right now. But the fact that he's missed, played six fewer games and only has 3 fewer points than the national scoring leader, says a lot to me about Colin Graf's candidacy. Macklin Celebrini will absolutely be in the mix as the nation's top freshman. You know, so it's going to be hard to knock off the forwards. I don't think this is necessarily a year that a defenseman can do it. But you've got Casey, you've got Steve Bouillon, you've got Lane Hutson, all among players that could potentially, you know, get into that discussion here. But boy, it's been fun to watch the scoring leaderboard this year, and really for much of the year, it's been Massimo Rizzo and Jack Devine from Denver at the top of it, and just the consistency of their scoring has been off the charts. So I just think it's going to be very difficult for a defenseman to win But if there is one that's in the mix, certainly Seamus Casey is among them. All right, let's go back to our draft questions. And this one comes from Hockey Research. Who are your three favorite draft sleepers? And when are your rankings coming out? Sorry, that's two questions. Well, I tend not to get into sleepers until later in the process for two reasons. One, you want to give yourself as much time on sleepers as you possibly can, because there are certainly, you don't want to tip your hand necessarily. And then also there's just a lot of variables that kind of come into play on that front. But, you know, I think that there are going to be some re-entry players that, you know, are always interesting looks in terms of sleepers. Guys that I think could get in the mix. Like, I think Caden Shahan from the USHL is one of those players that, you know, he's not going to be high on anybody's list, but he's going to be, he's had such a tremendous year for Sioux City that I think that he's an option for a team in the later rounds. I think that he's made a really good case for himself. I think Eric Paulson from Dubuque, I've liked what he's looked like this year. He's a guy that, you know, came over from Sweden and is now, you know, going to put himself on the college track and has done some things this year where you say, okay, I can see some NHL elements to his game. And the sleepers for me are almost always going to be on the college track because you get more time. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense for teams to continue drafting, very late the players that you only have 2 years to make a decision on to sign with the CHL. It's not to say that you shouldn't continue. Like, if you have players you have a strong conviction on in the later rounds, you should always, you know, take that player. But I just think that the system is set up to favor a little bit more these guys that are in on the college track, because then you get that 4 year window to kind of sign them and make a decision and not have to make a decision too soon. So you want to try to find guys that are on that path. So a couple of the guys that I mentioned are guys on that path. And I think that'll be, the kind of players that you want to take a nice long look at there. But yeah, so I think that's I know that doesn't really answer your question. As far as when the draft rankings come out, again, we're looking kind of at early February tentatively. It's been very difficult for me to get the time needed to, really dig in on players that I haven't had as good of a book on. I've seen a lot of games live this year. Obviously, just saw a bunch of guys at the World Juniors, but there's more to be done, a lot more work to be done to get the list ready and to make it something that you guys can actually get something out of. So that will come later. Next question comes from Matt D. Or excuse me, this next one comes from Lars, my bad. Lars is asking, looking at the draft rankings, I am again spotting a lack of Swedes. It feels like it's like this every year, and then after the U18 World Cup, they suddenly shoot up the rankings, and from having one or two on the early list in the first round, they're suddenly closer to five. Why is that? Is Sweden still under-scouted in general, or is it just by North American prospect journalists? I don't think that's really been the case overall. I mean, I think that plenty of Swedes have made the list. I do think that this year in particular is a down year for Swedish hockey players. I don't think we're going to see very many Swedish hockey players. The top Swedish related player is actually a Norwegian, Michael Brandstad Nygaard, who plays in Sweden, but he's not going to be he's not Swedish, so it doesn't really count there. But, you know, I think that we'll see a number of guys. I think like Leo Salenvalenius is one of the few that looks like he could, like, we might not have a Swedish player picked in the first round this year, which is crazy to think about. It's not out of the question that one of, you know, could be Salenvalenius or Lucas Pettersson, you know, some of those guys. But this year in particular, in this birth year, is not a lot of there just aren't a lot of guys. So yeah, that's kind of where you got to go with that one. It just is what it is. So I think this year it'll be, I don't have high hopes for that Swedish team. We'll see, you know, I'll get a look at some of those guys in the Five Nations, but I haven't seen anybody that really jumps out at me as a player that I want to watch, that I need to feel like I'm missing anything on at this point, but we will wait and see. All right. A few more questions to round this up. This next one comes from Jake Baskin, and he asks, where in the draft do you think Brody Ziemer will go? And that is a great question because I think he's been a tough player for me to get a read on this year. I like the skill. I like a lot about him. I think that it's very possible that Ziemer ends up in the late second, possibly even early third round, with the way things are kind of going for him this season. He's a heck of a player. I like the production. I like the way that he's played. I like the skill that he plays with. But again, we're looking at a below average size player, or closer to average size player, good skill, probably could have a little bit more drive in some of the games that we've seen. And then, you know, you probably would like to see a little bit more production from him as well. But I think second, late second, early third is probably as far as he would drop at this point. A lot to like about where he's headed, in terms of, you know, his development and, you know, being a guy that is on his path to college hockey. You get a little more development time with him, as a University of Minnesota commit, but, you know, it's just below a point per game right now. You know, but certainly plenty to like about. Not necessarily surprised that he was 42nd on the North American Central Scouting. That seems to be in line with where a lot of people will have him. All right, next one comes from Pat's Cast, and this is from, on Tanner Howe. Tanner Howe was rated an A prospect in the initial rankings, now 29th NA skater. What has led to his drop? Well, based on the definition of Central Scouting, you know, you'd have to ask them why he's where he is. But 29th on Central Scouting's list is still probably what they would consider an A-rated prospect. So I think Howe has always been a fringe first rounder in this class. You know, average size, decent enough skater, but maybe not enough pop in general. You know, like he has offensive pop, no question. Like the skill is there that he's been able to produce. You know, they show, you know, now that he doesn't have to be in the shadow of Connor Bedard, he's been able to kind of take control of the Regina Pats, and he, you know, as the captain, he's produced at a high level. That's great. You know, I just think that he's one of those guys where there's not any one thing that you could point out that says, you know, elite trait. And when you're his size and you know, you probably want to have something like that to more guarantee yourself a slot in the first round. I still think he can be. I don't think he really dropped. I think it's more just, you know, 29th. I thought that was a pretty fair range for him. It seems to be in line with what a lot of NHL teams are thinking about him as well. But good player. You know, if he's a high second round pick, that's still a great play. Still gives you a great chance to be an NHL player. But, you know, there is also the strong possibility that he's in the first round and will continue to be an A-rated prospect. All right, our next question is our last question. It comes from MV Pete, and he asks, hey CP, which goalie prospect do you like better, Kosa or Augustine? Do you project either to be a starting NHL goalie? Appreciate you. Well, Pete, I appreciate you as well. This is a tough question. You've got two players on very opposite spectrums of their developmental. I think that there's been a lack of patience with Sebastian Kosa, and there's been a bit of forgetfulness about how long it actually takes goalies to matriculate to the NHL. You know, Kosa spent all of last season in the ECHL with Toledo Walleye. This year he's in the AHL. There is a very deliberate kind of path that's starting. If I'm looking between the two goalies, the goalie that I have a little more trust and faith in is probably Augustine, because he's more technically sound. He has good hockey sense. He's got a little bit more of a controlled play. Kosa is a little wilder. He's a little bit less consistent. He's a little bit more athletic and read-react kind of goaltender. Whether or not that, you know, but he's still very early in his development. I think if you're looking at the upside of the two, you would say Kosa has the higher upside, bigger frame, better athletic profile, and different, you know, things. But I think with Augustine has a huge hockey sense advantage in my estimation, and also his technique is really sound. And now he's gotten proven winning capabilities on multiple stages. And he's got that really reserved kind of demeanor that seems to serve him well. And so that's going to be really interesting to watch. But I think Cosa versus Augustine is going to be something to watch, because obviously, you know, Detroit was keen to pick another goalie, even though they had Cosa as a first-round prospect. You know, we'll kind of be watching him and Jesper Wallstedt, because Cosa went before Wallstedt did. I think Wallstedt right now is projecting as a bit of a better goalie. But that might not be the case. Cosa is still very early on. You got to remember, he's 21 years old. A lot of goalies will not see their first NHL action until 22, 23, 24. And patience will continue to be the key with Cosa. The question will be, does Augustine pass him while Detroit is trying to be patient and give Cosa the net? As the first round pick, you figure he'll get the benefit of the doubt, but it's the NHL. They'll always go with the best player. And if that ends up being Trey Augustine down the line, that'll be it. It's getting harder to kind of get a sense that, you know, Cosa is for sure going to be a starting goalie in the NHL. And it's too early to say if Trey Augustine will. I think every goalie that you pick, every single goalie that you pick ever in the draft, you hope he's going to be a number one. You won't know for years. That's just the way it goes. So patience, my friends in Detroit, patience is all you can have. All right, folks, that is going to do it for today's episode. I really want to thank you for all the great questions you asked. I also want to remind you, subscribe to Flow Hockey. We've got the postseason on the way, the stretch run and run to the postseason coming up soon. We'll have college hockey, conference playoffs in the CCHA and Atlantic Hockey. We've got USHL, BCHL, AJHL, OJHL. I mean, just keep listing junior leagues. We'll have it. And a lot of great draft prospects, a lot of guys that we just talked about that you can find on Flow Hockey all season long. Also, stay tuned for much, 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 much more NHL draft coverage on Flow Hockey as we build up. We'll have those draft rankings out for you in a few weeks, and we will have much, much more, including mock drafts and scouting reports and shift-by-shift videos. Oh, it's all coming. So we will talk to you then. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on this week's episode of Talking Hockey Sense. Huge thanks to Amanda for producing, to everybody that asked questions, and, of course, you for tuning in. That's going to do it for me. My name is Chris Peters. This is Talking Hockey Sense. We'll catch you next time.